Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, August 22nd. We're good back morning. With you. Rachel, thanks for coming. I really appreciate it. I know it was hard for you. What, did you get up like not feeling well or something this morning?
Yeah, I'm just under the weather.
Really?
I just get bad periods. I'll come right out and say I get bad menstrual cramps.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What does that do? Does it put you like in a shitty mood or something or what? What does it mean to go through it?
It's just something men will never understand.
Right, so I'm trying to get an explanation.
You guys could never handle it, and I'm not going to waste the readers, the listeners' time explaining it. Just not fun.
Not fun, okay.
I know for a fact men could never handle this.
So are you saying on a mental level or on a physical level?
It's all-encompassing horribleness.
Okay. Well, thanks for the confidence in the male gender. I truly appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming in. We have an amazing guest in the studio. We'll be joined in just a minute. Just a couple things. This is kind of heartbreaking. I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but it really touched me. I guess this boy got a heart transplant in March, and it succeeded, you know? Mm-hmm. And then he goes to school. The first day of school to the eighth grade, he drops dead in school, collapses and dies on the first day. So, there's a boy getting another chance in life, and then I guess it just goes to show you, if you're supposed to go, you go, you know, right?
Well, also just
time.
That's such like a risky transplant, like having someone else's heart, right. You know, there's so many risks that go into that. I feel like the fact that he lived that long,
right,
that's crazy, with someone else's heart,
right? Isn't that amazing how they do that, man?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, how they connect all these things and stuff. Amazing. So that's that. I wanted to talk about Burning Man, since my friends are going there and I passed on the opportunity. Do you know what Burning Man is?
I do.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know, it's an event in the desert that's being held starting at the end of this week, I think.
Have you been?
No, I haven't. I was invited to go this year.
Why didn't you go?
But let me tell you, 70,000 people are going to converge in the Nevada desert, mm-hmm, for a couple weeks or so. Obviously, you want to go there with an RV. Many people don't. But and they built some amazing structures there. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no selling
money,
or buying or bartering even. You have to gift your stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, without expecting anything back. So that's amazing. No trash cans on the site.
My hairdresser goes all the time, every year.
Really?
Yeah.
So the first time I heard about it, I guess that's how it became kind of more famous, is because the founders of Google have been going there, I guess, because this thing has been going on in San Francisco since 1986. So it's been around for a while.
Yeah. It's kind of like a cool social experiment.
It really is, you know?
People could survive off no monetary. I mean, they obviously spent money to get there. It's
actually
really expensive.
Right, to bring a lot of shit.
It's really expensive. That's the funny part, is they spend all this money to live homeless in the desert for a week. You know?
And so if you ask me why I didn't go.
And they all look like models after a while, because they don't eat, you know? Like, they come back looking like supermodels.
Yeah, but the sun, my God, you know? The sun and the dust. I decided, you know what? When it was 100 degrees here and they invited me to go, I said, you know what? You can't pay me enough to go to the desert in this heat, with this sand and this dust. I can't last 5 minutes in the sun here. So I would sit in the RV all day. And if that's the case, why did I even bother going?
I just also think, like, the whole, like, music festivals have been around, like, forever, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just transformed into this, like, the haves and the have-nots. Like, it's not more of a, it's no longer just, like, anyone can get to this festival and a gathering of enjoying the music and the artists and whatever. And it's now about, if you have money, you know, you can go to this festival. And if you don't, well, enjoy it on Instagram.
Well,
you know,
like, welcome to our capitalistic society.
But that's not how it was. Like, what's, you know, everything. It was much different. I feel like back in the day, the culture of these festivals has now been capitalizing.
This is a different kind of festival. You know, not all. I mean, look, the music festivals, they have your Coachella and stuff.
Yeah, but you said Burning Man has been around since forever.
But it's not a concert type of thing. You know?
Right,
it's
but that's totally what I'm saying. Thing. I feel like back in the, like, even when this, when Burning Man, what it is now is not what it started off, was like hippies gathering in the, like, genuinely gathering in the desert and doing whatever they do, and now it's like this trendy, like, I see people at Burning Man and I'm like, you're not about that lifestyle.
Yeah, like, dressed like a lawyer or something.
Exactly, like,
desert.
I know exactly, like, you are not about this.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, I heard it costs about $700 or something dollars to get in.
Right. Well, right? There was a good article a couple years ago, because even like Coachella, for instance, which is has been within the last however many years, it's more one of the more newer music festivals. But what that even started off as to what it is now is ridiculous. I mean, the breakdown from what someone across the country just to get to Coachella and all they, like, the amount of money they spend, it's just absurd. So that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's just, you know, not everyone can enjoy these things anymore.
They priced it out of the market. Yeah, that's true. But at any rate, so I guess we'll have to live with the pictures. Because
I mean, but then did you hear about? you heard about that? The scandal of the Fry Festival a couple months ago.
Yes,
Ja Rule and that other guy teamed up to put on this, this concert, which is just like a slap in the millennials' face. I mean, that's what it is. It is just goes to show you, you know, like, this is what people, like, kids, this is what it's turned into. You know, just supermodels.
So it wasn't well thought out, that
concert. It was beyond that. That was never going to happen.
Wow. So people just went there, got totally disappointed, screwed, right?
And then
where was it supposed to be?
I think in Jamaica or
something. Right?
Somewhere there, somewhere tropical, and I mean, it just was a disaster. And also, I think there were, like, the weather conditions were also shitty too, and they didn't have the. It looked like a refugee camp.
Yeah, like a muddy type of place, if I remember correctly.
Refugee camp would be more appropriately titled.
Well, oh well.
And they, like, they saw that, showed you the picture of food, which was like two slices of bread in a styrofoam container. And like, like, what? Why would you think this was a good idea? Plus, Ja Rule hasn't been relevant for like 20 years. So why would you think anything he touched would be a good idea? You know what I'm saying?
I guess I don't know.
Do you know who Ja Rule is?
I do. Yeah. But it's, I don't know. I can't explain it or anything. But people try to duplicate Woodstock, I feel, sometimes. And they're just, they're not managing to do it right. Mm-mm. But, you know, being there with all these people sounds like fun, you know. And they make it sort of like a little city, you know. Mm-hmm. They create like streets and stuff. And obviously you want to bring a bike with you, a bicycle, so you can move around, otherwise you're stuck, you know.
So
that's the kind of living you can expect at Burning Man. But if that sounds fascinating to you, by all means go, you know. I'm just going to be spectator on this one because I don't like to rough it up too much.
I can't imagine actually you at Burning Man, Sam. Like, I feel like you would just be watching from inside the RV, like peeking through the window.
Right.
You know,
like,
what I mean? Like, you would be
I'm in the air,
wiping down the windows because it would just be getting so dusty. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Hey, I'm a partier myself.
I know you can party, but do I actually see you in the dust? You know what I mean? We're Jews. We traveled through the desert for 40 years. We don't need to be wandering through the desert voluntarily. Like, our ancestors did
true.
As punishment. Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
right. No, that's true. Do you realize why
Jews don't go to Burning Man?
Do you know why they were actually spending 40 years there in the desert in a trip that could have taken a few weeks?
Because we were exiled to the desert.
But who was exiled? By whom?
We were wandering through the... Weren't we going to the promised land?
Right, but the Hebrews left Egypt,
yeah,
right? Okay,
yeah,
God was guiding them.
Yeah.
He could have guided them directly to Israel. It would have taken a couple weeks, maybe,
yeah,
of walking.
Was it because of Moses?
No, because they wanted to get rid of the Egypt generation of people that were totally jaded and didn't believe in anything and all this stuff. They wanted to start a new generation of believers, so they wanted the old generation to die off in the desert, sort of.
It's kind of fucked up.
It is, but 40 years, I mean, it doesn't take that long to go from Egypt to Israel. It really doesn't. So these are the stories, you know. You have to really understand the Bible.
And that's exactly why Jews don't go to Burning Man.
Right. So we were exiled in a way by God, though, but... You know, but that's that's for another show. All right, well, we're going to be joined by our guest right now, who's sitting here patiently. I feel he has a lot to say. Seems like a really nice man.
This cover is sick, by the way.
The like cover of what?
Of
his books,
yes,
right?
I just want to...
Okay, so we might as well introduce him as an author and probably a lot more. We're joined by Sean Patrick Traver. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Hi, Sam.
Thank you for coming and joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm not going to show you that much appreciation because you didn't have to make a long trip.
No,
some people actually come from Orange County. I tell them, well, you know, I really feel bad. We'll make it worth your while. But you know what, Sean? We'll make it worth your while too.
Okay,
just stay closer to the mic for me. So so you're a writer.
I am.
Right? And you write a unique genre that I know I grew up on.
Yeah.
And that's horror, right?
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing. So obviously you're a big fan of horror if you decided to get into your own books and stuff.
I am, yeah. Yeah, I've been a lifelong fan of Stephen King, Anne Rice, authors like that.
Really?
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Wow. Me, I've grown up on Stephen King too since 16 years old, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I read The Stand and that like... blew my mind.
The first one I ever bought was Cycle of the Werewolf, and I still have the copy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I bought it
when I was
in the third
grade.
That's
one I never read, man. That's a very early one,
right?
It
is an early one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But Stephen King is the master of modern horror, I would say, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got different types of books, you know, like the movie It is coming out, and he's got like the bad guy is a monster that doesn't really have a shape, and only Stephen King can describe something alive that's not really human or an animal, mm-hmm, or anything, mm-hmm, like that, right?
And to give it such personality,
right,
and consistency.
And you buy into it.
Completely.
Right?
Yeah.
Awesome. So, well, we'll get to your books, of course, and everything, but let's find a little bit about you. Are you in L.A. born and raised?
I am. I'm one of the few natives,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So I was born in Santa Monica, and I grew up here in the Valley.
Really? Mm-hmm. Santa Monica. That's a cool, mm-hmm, place.
What high school did you go to?
I went to Granada Hills High School. I actually went to ninth grade right at Notre Dame right across the street.
Oh, wow.
There.
Right. My dad grew up here in Van Nuys. He went to Grant.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So this is very much
not
my neighborhood.
Van Nuys, but around here.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't realize his dad grew up here.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What school did he go to? Did he go away to school?
He went to Grant school?
No, I mean to college.
For undergrad, he went to San Diego State. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool school. And what about you? Did you go to college?
I did. I went to Cal State Northridge.
Right, oh, really?
Right here in the Valley.
Well, we both did. You see,
oh, really?
We should have met each other a long time ago. We probably have
there
a lot in common.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Granada Hills, is that because you lived on that side of
it
town
is.
At the time?
Yeah.
So that's cool. I mean, yeah, we grew up in the Valley together. That's cool. And we seem to have experienced the same thing, read the
you
same
guys are
stuff,
basically
right?
The same person.
Exactly. Right. There you go.
Twins.
And you see, Desiree eventually was going to hit a bullseye with all the guests she's sending us, you know. It's raining guests, hallelujah. But no. We love every guest, though. So far, we've really been satisfied. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to be here.
So now you grew up here. What was it like growing up in L.A.? Obviously, a very different place than what we see today.
It is.
You.
Yeah, it is very different. Stranger Things, the TV show, it looked a lot like that.
Really?
You know, it's my folks still live out in Northridge, where large parts of E.T. were shot. So that archetypal suburb where all the houses are the same. And yeah, that's exactly where I grew up.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow, very cool. And did you have a sort of a sheltered childhood, or what was it like? I mean, those areas are pretty well-off families.
It was fairly good, well-off. It was pretty
well-educated and everything.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, And do you have any siblings?
I do. I have one sister.
Really?
Yeah.
Younger, older?
Younger, a couple years younger. Yeah. She still lives here, too.
Really?
Yeah.
So the whole family is here.
Yeah, we haven't strayed too far from the valley.
That's cool. Now, have you traveled a lot in your life, too? Did you get out of town?
I really have not. I've traveled a little bit. I've been to New Orleans. I've been to New York. I haven't really been overseas.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, maybe it's time. Yeah.
It is definitely
do
time.
Do a book tour overseas.
I would love to.
Yeah, let's hope you get there and continue this. But this is amazing. So you grew up here. You have a connection to the city, mm-hmm. right? Do you like it here?
Oh, yeah. I very much like it here.
Really?
And the connection is very much reflected in the books. They're
right.
set in this neighborhood, in this area, about the history of this area.
Yeah.
So
there's been a lot of books and movies made about this area, you know, mm-hmm. and it's really amazing when you live here to be familiar with all these places, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you did. You went with places that are familiar to us.
Definitely.
And you ran away with that and fictional stories. And
I did. It was fun to research these familiar places that I've lived in my entire life, and you often don't know the history of Los Angeles because everything gets plowed under so quickly.
That's true.
There's hardly a building that's more than 50 years old anywhere in this town, but there is history here if you look for it.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. Some buildings do look very old in this town.
There are a few, yeah.
Yeah. But so you're saying most of the buildings here are like 50 years old or less?
They tend to be pretty new. There's a lot of development and redevelopment. Things come and go very quickly in L.A.
Even commercial buildings?
Even commercial buildings and how? Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't realize that. I thought, well, some places are just like stuck in the past and mm-hmm. there's no change, you know. But obviously you've seen a big change in the traffic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
right?
The traffic has changed immensely.
Remember,
You
know, I mean, I'm talking about the 80s. It wasn't like this.
Mm-hmm.
It was never like this.
No,
I don't know. How do you think they're going to solve this problem, Rachel, if every day we add how many new cars do you think we buy in L.A. every day?
Quite a few.
In Southern California, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the old cars are leaving the roads at the same rate.
No.
So we're stuck with
all
these cars, right? But nobody takes it because it's useless here.
Yeah.
It really is, you know.
Well, people take it. Part of the reason it's useless is that it's already overburdened. Mm-hmm.
There's so many people on it already. There's not enough of it.
There's not enough of it.
So you have to take an Uber from one to the other and things like that.
People are taking it. It's just not sufficient already.
Right. But, you know, if you had a subway system like in New York or in London or Paris, it's a different question, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's a whole different thing. But here, they'll never be able to build it because there's nowhere, you know. What are you going to do, close roads? Yeah, close roads for 10 years.
There are constant fights with the neighborhoods that it's going
to
go through.
But it's also hard to go underground with all our earthquakes, I feel like.
Yeah,
it's obviously a bad idea on a certain
level.
It's a bad idea. Yeah.
So what I think
hovering cars.
Yeah, hovering cars. Or I think it's going to be the self-driving autonomous cars.
I feel like that's going to be like public transportation. There'll be a point where we're like, we had to drive our own cars, you know?
Right, mm-hmm. right.
And, like, accidents occurred. Like,
right.
You know what I mean?
And
like,
I actually had to control the car.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right, yeah. Make it go, you know?
Because if everything's on a certain time thing and you're already in the car, you know what I mean? If you want to get off and alter your route, mm-hmm. that's one thing. But, like, that would make everything, I think, more efficient.
Right.
I think so, too. I think in a couple generations, we'll be surprised that we tolerated car accidents
right.
in
exactly.
human error for so long.
Exactly.
Yeah, in a few generations, that'll be unthinkable that we let
exactly.
that occur for so many years.
That's what of all the things now, like, I remember, like, when text messages first came out when I was a kid, I was, like, very young, but the whole concept of sending a message between two machines, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, that to me was, I was like, you mean it? There's a message in there from
it still kind of blows my mind that we prefer to pass digital notes rather than use the video phones that we all have on our computers.
Right.
That's true, right? Because we can use
the things
video
from the Jetsons that we don't really like that
exactly.
much. We prefer the digital notes,
and I think that's why the visual the TV phone never took off because people don't want to be seen when they're on the phone.
No,
you've
got the full social obligation. You've got to comb your hair,
right?
And
otherwise
it's like being there in person.
I just want to be on the phone and just talk.
That's the beauty of the phone. You can make a call from anywhere and get it. Yeah,
but I mean, I remember when we first got a phone. When I grew up, I must have been six, seven years old.
Oh, yeah.
In the 60s, we first got a telephone in Israel. It was pretty new. And, yeah, I mean, the idea of being able to talk to someone and not having to go there
mm-hmm.
to talk to them was unbelievable.
Yeah, I remember the first cellular phone I ever saw that my father bought back in the early 90s or late
80s, right?
Probably was. Yeah, it had a shoulder strap to
carry
the battery pack on it.
I
had a cord with the receiver that you picked up.
That's why I love Stanley Kubrick, like 2001 Space Odyssey, uh-huh. because that has so much technology that we use now.
That's
you know
true,
what I mean?
Right?
That movie was so forward-thinking.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it, yeah. And I think the movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise, I think that's very predictive of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and that's scary, you know. You watch The Black Mirror on Netflix.
Oh, I love The Black Mirror.
Do you?
Yeah, did you like
that? It's an amazing show,
yeah.
Okay,
see, but I won't watch it anymore. It's too depressing for me.
It is that.
Right? Well, the thing, okay, so Black Mirror, to see, because I feel like a lot of like thrillers and horror stories take place either in like the present or almost in the past, and there's very few forward you know what I mean, like futuristic thrillers.
Yeah, like that near future.
Exactly, or even like incorporating technology and thinking like the technology could be somewhat of a source of horror. And
yeah, it's kind of a cross-genre sci-fi horror thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll bet you that's where you're going to go with one of your books eventually, right?
Maybe, possibly. Yeah, we'll see.
When, did you, so you became enamored with horror, with the genre early on in your life?
I did, yeah.
Did you always like to read?
I did. I always liked to read. Really? Since I was a little kid, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I know, I was like that too, you know? I don't know. And you know what? I don't remember, well, maybe my mom did read to me, but I don't think my parents read to me as much as I read to my kids.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I think it still has to come from somewhere inside, that love for books, you know?
I think you're very right.
Yeah, you need to love the stories and
the meditative aspect of it, of having that story come to life inside your own head.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah.
So I remember when I was very young, I would say maybe 12, 13, I would start buying these paperback novels of horror, you know, and those were translated from English to Hebrew. I grew up in Israel. So, and I loved them, you know, it was just like a horror series, and it was vampires and anything you could think about, you know. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I grew up, I never liked the teen romance. That was never for me. Yeah. I was like R.L. Stine.
Oh, yeah.
That, and when he dropped the Goosebumps and then the teen series, like that, I've read every book R.L. Stine probably ever wrote, you know, period of time.
It's, yeah, I remember him.
So you grew up on that, too?
I did. I read a lot of Dean Koontz back in the day, a lot of Stephen King. Yeah. I still read Stephen King.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
R.L. Stine was like the children's Stephen King.
Basically,
See,
he's got dozens of books.
I never read one. Oh, so that's for the children's books, R.L. Stine?
Well, yeah, he
young
was...
Young readers?
You're like kids' horror.
Yeah, right. It was like... Yeah, exactly. Because, like, I was too young to... I mean, I did read Stephen King as a kid, but it was just... My mind, it was too much for a young kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not in a shocking way, but like I just didn't understand a lot of it, so it would be hard for me to...
R.L. Stine is non-traumatizing horror for children.
Well, I mean, but R.L. Stine stuff really did scare me. I mean, it is kind of freaky for... Yeah.
Interesting. So what was he writing about, for example?
He just wrote about, like, he did everything, like, he would create characters and, like monsters and things like that, but it was also very real life. Like he was in California, so like there's one about out in Pasadena, if I remember that one. But he just like, he did a whole cheerleader series about haunted, you know, frightening killer cheerleaders. So it's just like, you know, imagining yourself in high school or wherever, and
taking
real
elements
life,
from kids' lives and making them scary.
So it was relatable, but like, it could happen, you know, who knows if there's something hiding under the, you know, or like an evil teacher or whatever, you know, something, whatever the stories were. But they were great. Mm-hmm. They were so good. You could read them now and still enjoy
them. They're still popular. I work at a used bookstore as well, and R.L. Stine, I'm asked for him every day. He's
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's amazing.
How cool is that to work at a used bookstore?
It is great. It's great.
Huh?
I really like it. Yeah, it's a day job that doesn't damage my self-image.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, at least you're with books still.
Exactly. I really do enjoy it.
That's awesome.
And it's a great research library that I have there at my fingertips. We have a huge section
on
local history.
Bookstore?
The Iliad Bookshop in North Hollywood.
Okay.
Well, I've heard of it.
Yeah. Oh, you should come by. It's an amazing store.
Where is it, on Sunset?
No, it's here in the Valley. It's on Chandler and Cowanga.
Oh, I see. I thought you said in Hollywood.
Yeah, North Hollywood.
Which has no affiliation with the other Hollywood.
Yeah, right.
Geographical or otherwise.
Right. I actually was looking for places to live in North Hollywood the other day. You know what? They talk about the art district and stuff.
That's exactly where I am.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But there's some, I don't know, questionable areas there. You
there
know?
Are. It, right? It has improved a lot in recent years.
Yeah, it has. But I think I ended up in some of those areas. I thought, I don't think I want to live here.
No, it used to be stretches of abandoned storefronts and
right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I live in Hollywood, so I can't say anything.
Yeah, Hollywood is where it's at, you know.
No,
that's
but it's like...
Happened.
it's LA. I mean, yeah, you, right. you could be in the nicest part, and there's
and two blocks away, it's something entirely different. Yeah, that
exactly.
is LA. It's
there's
a patchwork.
One
that's
street,
true.
You
know? Plus, I live here a mile from here. This is a very good area. But a car was broken into in my garage the other day I live. And this happened a couple times. And so you go, what the hell? You know, nowhere's
Angeles.
Safe. You
nowhere's
know?
Entirely
nowhere.
Safe.
No,
yeah.
No. That's Los Angeles.
So we're talking to Sean Patrick Traver, and he's written a couple books. We're talking about the horror genre and everything, and we'll get specifically to your books. Now, since we are talking about Stephen King and horror books and stuff like that, so as a child, did you have any book or movie that stays with you that really affected you and influenced maybe your current books?
Oh, there were quite a few. There were definitely quite a few. And It by Stephen King, the big movie's coming out.
Right, and I just brought it up, right?
Oh, yeah. Man, clowns freaked me out.
When I was in ninth grade, I had a paperback copy of that book. I had a long bus ride to school. I read that thing cover to cover, and when I got to the end, I just started back over at the beginning.
Are you serious? Yeah. Wow. That's a book with 1,200 pages.
And I read
so.
Three copies of it to tatters.
Wow. So,
yeah, I was really into that book.
You really were.
I get very obsessively into the things I'm into.
But you know what? It's funny because It is one of my favorites of Stephen King also.
Have you done the It experience?
I have not. I really want
that's
to.
That's literally around the corner.
What is it?
It's in Hollywood. It's like this. It's for the movie. Whole like simulation. It's like I think you can go into a haunted house and it's like a simulation of the movie. It's
all
like
my friends are posting Instagram photos and things. So I really,
really
want to go. I definitely got to check it out.
I couldn't do it.
Good.
I just...
scary, huh?
I mean, it's weird. Like, I have a weird relationship. I love scary thriller. I'm not into the gory, bloody stuff. I like the more, like, thriller, spiritual.
The creepy.
Yeah, the creepy, you know, supernatural, anything like that. But I immediately regret it after.
Really?
It's that feeling of, like, I need to watch something super, like, soft and nice and cuddly. Like, cuddling cats on YouTube for 3 hours, you know? But I it's like that dangerous, you know, line of, like, do I want to watch this? No.
So It was good for you.
It was, and it was a long book that delved back into the past.
Right.
In a way that's definitely influenced my current books.
I see. Okay, so new books, you deal with that as well?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, you see,
did
the
it
part
scare
of
you?
It...
Did any of it scare you?
I think it did the first time I read it through, and then the subsequent readings were all about the setting and the characters.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
About the construction of it. As I really studied it without meaning to study it necessarily as a kid. I just went over it so many times that I picked up so much from
that's
it.
True,
there was
right.
like one movie that I watched, it was a scary movie as a kid that like haunted me for years. I mean, that's the thing, is like, that's how affected I get by like scary
stuff. It affected you for years.
Years. Wow. A movie.
Yeah. You know what I liked about the book, It, about the story, is, you see, it was never really a horror book for me, and for that matter, none of the Stephen King books are really horror to
me. That's not
because
what brings
because it's
me back.
The characters,
it's
right?
The characters.
He really gets into the characters, and It is about a story of grown-ups that have to go back into their childhood almost, put themselves in that situation again to fight the evil that they experienced as kids. And the only way they could beat it is if they got back together. Mm-hmm. So you have all this like really good friendship
definitely.
Over the years, right? And this I remember from only reading it once a long time ago when it first came out.
That's what really keeps bringing me back to Stephen King is his characters ultimately, that they tend to be ordinary people facing terrifying
and
situations.
And many times
and
kids, you know, boys, girls, you know. And,
I liked
and
pet,
how he
pet
gets
cemetery.
Into
Pet Cemetery too.
Pet Cemetery.
That's one of the really scary,
too,
right? That one scared me that, when I read that. That genuinely scares me.
That's true, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of them do. But I have to admit, books don't scare me as much as movies do. You know, maybe because you don't have the music and all that.
Yeah.
But I love reading it. It just it doesn't scare me. You
no,
know
I think
I'm
books
saying?
Can unsettle you for a longer period of time.
Right,
it stays
right.
With you and
but you can also
shock
stop. You can also stop and pick it up later.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Movies have the music, and they you know
exactly.
the cat can jump out of the cupboard at you. It's a much
things
more
like
intense
that. You have the people screaming next to you and stuff. You know, that's a funny thing.
Yeah.
A book is more a personal thing. Yeah.
It is. It's a very different way of approaching a piece of fiction.
Yeah.
Did you like that, is it John Cusack, or Room 237? Have you seen that movie, Room 237? Or is that what is?
Something like
Yeah.
Where about the Dolphin Hotel.
Yes.
About,
I have not seen the show. I read the story. I remember
oh my
the story.
God.
Yeah.
It's a really,
the story
is
terrifying.
Is that the right actor?
Really?
it's a really great ghost story.
I always get him and... who's the other actor? But anyways, I think Samuel L. Jackson's in it too. Or something.
Yeah.
It's really
it's about a haunted hotel room,
right? And he's a writer who writes about haunted places mm-hmm. to determine that, like, none of them
I remember
have ever
that
been
being
haunted.
A particularly scary story about
it
a haunting. It's
really
yeah, it was
good.
Really great.
Really?
That, yeah, it's one of those movies that and Mothman Prophecies is the movie that haunted me for years.
Yeah, yeah, that one is pretty scary.
Yes.
Now, so talking about haunting and everything, I see in the notes and stuff, you're very mm-hmm. fascinated with that stuff.
I am. Definitely.
And so you believe there's haunted places around LA all over the place, right?
There are definitely notorious places. There are places that people claim are haunted. People okay. see ghosts all the
here,
time.
It's let me really. Tell you, here are two places that I know that when I go in, I feel eeriness. Okay. The Comedy Store on Sunset and the Hollywood Tower apartments.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The old building. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who used to live there. I would go and visit her. And that both of those are the same. It's like cold and just heavy air, yeah. just like heaviness in
I've
the
I've heard
air.
That about the Comedy Store.
And there are comics who have seen mm-hmm. ghosts there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were apparently suicides and in the building. Yeah, and yeah there are reasons for ghosts mm-hmm. there. But yeah, I've definitely heard those stories about the Comedy Store.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But I always get this like weird feeling of like. Just like yeah, in the same both the same feeling.
Mm-hmm. Good. What are some of other places that you know that people think are haunted?
I know that the new wing of LACMA, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, used to be the May Company department store. And in 1989, I think it was, there was a murder-suicide in the tea room there. So people still claim to see the ghosts in that new wing of LACMA.
Really?
Yeah.
And so you want to tell me separate people see the same thing?
Apparently, yeah, yeah.
I don't believe this shit.
A lot of hauntings work that way.
I know, right?
Different people will see the same thing at different times, completely unrelated.
I know.
You haven't compared notes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I picked up a book, talking about books, I picked up a book called Spook, and that's about like how... like how science views the afterlife.
Yeah, by Gary Roach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it sort of like lost me because everything is like, I can't really believe it. Nothing is really concrete in anything, you know? Everything is people thinking that, people thinking this.
That's the paranormal. It resists scientific inquiry
exactly.
to a large degree. It's, hard to pin down exactly how to pursue it.
Right, right. So tell me, so how do you approach your writing? Well, we're jumping from one to another. Let's stay with LA for a sec. Second. So, LACMA, what other places can you think of?
You know, there's the Federal Bar here in North Hollywood, which is an old bank building that went in 1926, I think it was. And uh-huh. I personally feel that weird, creepy feeling.
Really?
There's a large basement complex underneath it that I got to go into a couple times before it was what it is now. It used to be, it just sat empty for years. And It seasonally was redressed as a Halloween store, and they would put creepy things in the basement. And for a good reason, because that basement is creepy.
That's so cool.
You get that cold feeling of a presence in there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So so you went to school and stuff. What did you take in school in college?
English, literature.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you knew that's what you wanted to do.
Oh, always, yeah. I never had any doubt.
Really?
Yeah, it's the only thing I ever really
Very
wanted to do.
Very cool. You see, that's the thing. I mean, many people in their arts say that. You know, they mm-hmm. say, that's all I ever wanted to mm-hmm. do, right?
The frustrating part was waiting to live a life that would inform some fiction.
Exactly.
I wanted to be good at it before I had anything worth saying.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
So how many years did it take you, actually, till you felt confident enough?
I would say with Gravesend, my first novel, that was the first time I really felt like I was able to achieve the thing I wanted to achieve. And that was about 7 years ago.
7 years ago, you actually sat down. How long did it take to write it?
About a year and a half.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The book is called Red Witch.
The new one is called Red Witch.
So that's a new one?
It is. It's brand new. It just came out last month.
Oh, okay. Really, so which is the first one?
Thank you. I really like the cover, too. Yeah.
Which is your first one? Graveyard?
Gravesend is the first one I wrote. Red Witch is the first one chronologically.
Oh, I see. Okay. But let's go let's go with the first one you wrote.
Okay.
Gravesend, a magical thriller.
It's about a modern-day witch who helps an undead detective solve the mystery of his own resurrection. Yeah, so it's about a classic LA private eye from the 1950s who wakes up in 2010. He crawls his way out of his grave and has no real idea why, and he has to enlist a witch to help him figure it out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So it's like present day type of thing, mm-hmm. right?
But it delves back into the 50s, and it delves back further than that into the turn of the 20th century. It's, yeah.
And how do you, I mean, living in this period, how do you go back and actually write about places, and do you have to do the research?
There is a lot of research, yeah, but there are great resources. There's the library at Cal State Northridge is amazing. Valley College has a large photography archive, and there's just the internet. You can do a lot of historical research more or less on the fly these days.
That's true, right?
Yeah. And they're just incredible sites that people put up for their own purposes of collections of photos and reminiscences about the past. And you can build up a really complete portrait.
So there's like a whole community of people that love this stuff.
Yeah, there are, definitely.
Follow this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they put up amazing stuff online that's there for researchers to have a look at and get a sense of what things used to be like.
Yeah, so you got a feeling that you could actually replicate that in a book or describe it in a book.
Oh, I do, yeah. I almost feel like I remember it. I almost feel like I can look out the window and remember when it was. I catch myself saying things like that to people occasionally. I remember when this was all orange groves, and I don't remember it, of course, but I've seen so many pictures, I've imagined it for so long that
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's I feel funny. Like I do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
true,
that's
right?
the key, is just to imagine it as thoroughly and completely as possible. So that's kind of what I'm trying
that's
to do.
True.
So, yeah, but I really do drift into, forgetting where the boundaries are a little bit.
So for those of you who like horror and scary stuff, man, I mean, you get a detective with a skull smoking a cigarette with a gun and a witch with half a face. anything you would expect from a Graves End type of book. So you wrote this 7 years ago, right?
I did, yeah.
And you gave it, so I like the cover because it also says now 15 cents, the old time novels and stuff that we used to read, like the pocket.
Decorative element, yeah. I wanted it to have that pulpy kind of feel, yeah.
Were your parents writers?
No. My father is an economics professor and my mother was a registered nurse for 40 years. Yeah.
What about your sister?
She's a real estate appraiser. Yeah, and they all still live here in the valley. They're all at Northridge.
Yeah.
And you're the creator.
I guess, yeah. I'm the rogue element.
I love it.
But obviously you come from an educated family.
Yeah,
and
they always had great respect for books. They were always willing to feed my book habit.
Right.
As a kid, if I wanted books, they would always be happy to buy them.
Really?
Whatever they were, yeah.
That's
Yeah,
like,
I still appreciate that.
At least it's not heroin. You know?
I think there was some of that thinking. At least it's
more
not so
books.
Many things. Yeah. If he wants to sit quietly and read, I guess we can indulge that.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they did.
I did ask you this, but are you Jewish?
No, I'm Irish.
You're not Jewish. No. Wow.
Yeah.
You haven't been to Ireland yet?
I have not.
I'd love it.
I've got plans to go.
I loved Ireland.
I've got friends over there.
You can pass for Jewish guys. Just the niceness and the values I think you have. You know, you came from an educated family, education, writing, creating.
I've worked as a movie extra, and I've been cast as Jewish several times, actually. Yeah, so you're not the first person to make that observation.
but it's really not about the look, but your background, the way your values and everything. Mm-hmm. So very cool. But take that as a compliment.
I do, definitely.
You're in a room full of Jews here.
Yeah, valuing education and creativity, definitely.
I'm an Irish Jew. All right. I'm gonna claim that because I've been to Ireland. No, but it's beautiful there. So
yeah, that's my understanding.
And the people
are
the nicest people.
That is what
I
hear. Yeah.
And it would be good for like inspiration.
It
for
would
more
definitely. It would. Yeah.
Stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So let me ask you this now. I look at the covers of Graves End and Red Witch.
Uh-huh.
And you see skeletons there, and this woman is actually like about to kiss a skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, is it really a skeleton?
It is.
Or is that what she sees, or is that what's...
No, he really is a skeleton. In Red Witch, he is the Aztec god of the dead. And he's a bit of a shapeshifter. He can appear any way he wants.
Oh, I see.
The skeleton is his default position, but he changes for Ingrid as their relationship develops.
I see.
He's able to appear as a full human being. And
I see, because why would you want to kiss a skeleton?
Yeah, you wouldn't. And he takes that into account for her.
Wow, so how do you think about all this stuff, man? So let me ask you this. So you think about this. Let's go through the process. Do you get the general idea in your mind of what you want to write about, or do you already know the whole story?
No, I don't know the whole story. I have a general idea of where I'm going. I knew quite a bit about Red Witch because I'd written Gravesend first, and Ingrid is a character in Gravesend. So basically, I knew so many stories about her that I figured I might as well put them together into a book.
I see.
Yeah, so in a
Who
sense...
Who is Ingrid? Is that like a real character?
She is not a real person.
Not a real person, but a character that has existed before?
Yes, definitely.
Really?
Yeah, she's existed in my fiction before.
Oh, and, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, she plays a role in this world.
I see. Wow, very interesting. Yeah. So you developed a certain world in mm-hmm. in your mind also.
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah, and the world is still there. Everything I write tends to be set in the same universe. They're all connected on some level, even really? When they don't seem to be. Yeah.
Oh wow.
That's another weird. Stephen King influence.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it amazes me how people build like new worlds, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, and we had another guest the other day with the Atlantean, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And am I saying it correctly?
Atlantean, I think.
Yeah. And she built a whole world, you know, mm-hmm. in language and stuff. So I like that you managed to get into this. Now, so you were influenced by all these writers, but
definitely.
You have your own original stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? So you sit down, you write the story, and then you go, what? He's going to, like, shift his shape now? I mean, how does it come to you? I would never think of something that shifts shapes. I don't know. How does that come to you? Maybe from reading about it in the past?
Yeah, that largely came out of the actual mythology. Okay. Many gods and trickster figures are shapeshifters.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. See, I don't know much about mythology. Well, he's an English major. He knows all that shit, you know? Yeah, I never... You know, I mean, somehow I fell through the cracks through high school and college where I never... Meaning that I never was exposed to Shakespeare.
Oh, really?
For some reason, I never had a class with Shakespeare, mm-hmm. so I can't appreciate it.
Oh, that's you can still.
You know what
I'm
saying?
It's never too late.
I can't. I try to read it. I'm like, what the fuck is he saying, man? I can't deal with
you
this.
You got to see a good performance. It's very different seeing it performed than reading it.
Yeah, for sure. But at any rate, so you mean like watching the plays and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Actually watching it brought to life by a good actor who really understands the lines and the character. That makes all the difference in terms of
understanding. I'm talking about reading it.
For some reason, I always, like, I really did like, I enjoyed reading Shakespeare.
Really?
Yeah, for some reason, because I thought...
Do they teach you to understand the language or something?
Well, it's kind of like...
They try.
You try, but it's more about, there's a whole story behind it. So it's less about, maybe so much about... what is directly being said and more about what's actually mm-hmm. going on in the situation and what the characters are doing.
Right.
Because you're not going to understand. I mean, that's just a different time. It's a different language. But you can understand, like, what is going on. But I love how he says it. It's almost, like, backwards.
How
he speaks.
Very
much like Yoda. And so many of the figures of speech that we continue to use were created by Shakespeare.
You know,
everyday common phrases that we don't even think about that are just part of our lexicon.
Right.
It all came from Shakespeare. He was
unbelievable.
Yeah.
You see, I wish I didn't miss out on that. So maybe,
and then the dramatics behind it I think, because it's not all lovey-dovey or whatever. He's a great comedy writer.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's so mm-hmm. funny.
But there's tragedy too, right?
Yeah.
There's all of it.
I really do think that everything that exists within the human condition was somewhere explored in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Whatever you're feeling or thinking, there's a line in Shakespeare somewhere that addresses it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. He was the original memer.
Yeah. In a sense, I think he was.
That's funny.
So after you went to college, what step did you take next? I'm curious. What did you decide to do with your career after you got out of college?
I started trying to write some screenplays.
Okay.
That have gone largely unproduced.
Yeah,
so,
right?
So, yeah.
But that's how you cut your teeth on this, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It taught me to be concise. It taught me a lot about structure. You know, so the books don't... They seem to ramble a little bit, but they will always come back to a point, I promise. There's a through line that makes it all make sense.
That's okay. I mean, Stephen King rambles a lot, and I have to admit that sometimes it's worth reading, and sometimes you just gloss over it. You go, you know what? I don't know what he was smoking when he wrote this part. Let me just skip over to the other one.
Yeah, but screenwriting did impress upon me the need of a structure with a rising action and a conflict and a resolution and all that. Yeah.
So. You have to think about that,
right? You do.
Right?
Have to. Yeah, that's where the craft comes in,
Right. Mm-hmm. You see, I don't want to know that craft because I want to just be fascinated by the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't get into the structure.
There's a balance between the craft and the inspiration.
That.
You've got to have all that craft needs to be in the service of a good idea that really fascinates you and compels
you.
Yeah, you
know, it's almost like being here doing the radio show and then being over there listening to the show, you know. It's a whole different experience, and I think this works out the same way,
I think so too.
Like when they make a movie, sometimes it's cool to see how they do the special effects, but sometimes you don't want to. You know, and the same with the magic. Remember, we had the mentalists here. They were doing magic, mental stuff and stuff, which was unbelievable. But I said, don't tell me how to do it.
You want to maintain the illusion.
Yeah, because once you find out, you go, is that all there's
then
doing?
It doesn't work on you anymore.
Right?
It's true. Very true with movies and books. It's too much information about how the hot dog gets made. Doesn't increase your appetite.
Exactly. Very cool. You guys can follow us. Go to SeanPatrickTraver.com. You have A lot of stuff on there, both your books, right?
Yes, I do.
You also have short fiction, I see, right?
I do have a couple
short fiction.
Short pieces in anthologies, yeah.
And what are those about? Those are like separate short stories, right?
They are just short stories, yeah.
Right, but each one is it a collection or each one is just one story?
I think what I have up online, I just have short stories in anthologies.
I just have
one story in a collection.
All right.
Cool. One of them called Sugar Skulls is kind of a bridge between the two novels, between Gravesend and Red Witch.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, one of the short stories is closely related to this world.
Wow. So now let me ask you this now. I mean, you get into this stuff, and I mean, do you take yourself into dark places here? I mean, you have to, right?
Oh, sure. Of course. You have to explore everything.
Right.
It's you're the actor playing every role, the dark
so
ones and the
light
ones.
So now, do you worry about what people are going to think about you personally, that you thought about this stuff in the first place?
A little bit, yeah.
Right? Because sometimes I wonder, you know.
Yeah,
these
sometimes
guys,
I worry about me a little bit that I thought of these things in
right,
the first
you know? Because
yeah.
sometimes you go, you know, I mean, this guy actually wrote like about... you know, the unthinkable and stuff, okay, mm-hmm. like raping children or whatever, and you go, how do they even go to that place and not afraid that somebody will think?
Yeah, I don't think I go anyplace quite that dark.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
But people do. Somebody
does. Somebody does, yeah.
Somebody
definitely.
Does write about this stuff. And you go, that mind, he went there.
Mm-hmm.
He went there,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, but you went to places that
yeah,
I probably wouldn't
want
to go. Yeah,
that's kind of more of a real-world horror than I would explore. I like mythological and, yeah.
Well,
yeah, I like monsters, you know, of the supernatural variety, not the human variety.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Yeah.
Well, so tell people again the two books, Gravesend
and Red Witch. Red Witch is about a silent film star who has an affair with the Aztec god of the dead.
Aztec. God of the dead. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you really had to do a lot of research,
I did
man,
do a lot
right?
of research, yeah.
Good for you. It's worth it just for that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it
because
is.
Because you're taking us to worlds we mm-hmm. never knew, never will know,
yeah.
probably, right?
And I didn't know much about them before I started the
so
research.
So you started exploring
yeah, so,
it,
yeah,
right?
I took the journey first. So.
Wow. So now when you wrote the first one, so you wrote Gravesend first, and then this was a prequel, Red
yes,
Witch?
Yes, it is a prequel, yeah.
Okay, so then you realized, okay, I better go back and introduce some other concepts. That's
pretty much,
interesting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's interesting to do
mm-hmm.
it that way.
I hope it bears a similar relationship that Better Call Saul does to Breaking Bad.
Amazing.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Awesome. So tell people where they can find you, Sean.
You can find me online at SeanPatrickTraver.com. You can find me on Amazon. You can find me at the Iliad Bookshop in North Hollywood.
So where is it located again?
Chandler and Cahuenga, 5400 Cahuenga in North
Chandler
Hollywood.
Chandler and Cahuenga.
It's a classic used bookstore.
Really?
Yeah, there's nothing
well,
else
I'm
like
gonna
it.
Well, I'm going to come visit you.
Yeah, then. Please do.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. It's down the street
it
practically
is down the street,
from
yeah.
here. Aztec gods.
Yeah.
Wow. Sugar skulls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you see, that's what you guys can expect. A lot of skulls. You know what? My daughter's going to love this stuff. She loves this stuff. She's reading it now for the first time.
Oh, lucky.
And she's like, I can't wait to finish so I can see the movie. I said, well, then go see the movie first. But it's going to spoil the book and mm-hmm. all this. I said, okay, so just wait with the movie.
Yeah,
then,
I think I found that the longer time elapses between reading and watching, the more I enjoy both.
Right, exactly.
If I compare them both directly, I enjoy both of them less.
Exactly, and that's what happened to me. I read it when it first came out. Mm-hmm. It must have been, 2000 mm-hmm. or something, mm-hmm. you know, something like that.
Yeah.
No, even before that, no? Yeah, probably like 2000. I don't know. I'm totally
yeah, it's been
close.
A long time since I read the book, so I think I'm
right.
primed to enjoy the movie for what they've done with the movie. It will
right.
undoubtedly be different in some ways than the book. It's,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
adaptation,
no.
but yeah.
No, it was actually a lot more than this. I think it was 1990, actually,
mm-hmm.
when it came out. But at any rate, I haven't read it since then again.
Mm-hmm.
So I will enjoy the movie, I know. Sean Patrick Traver, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
thank
me.
You.
You're
great.
Amazing, and you're always welcome back. You've definitely opened up some things for me to think about.
Okay.
I'm definitely going to read this, because normally I wouldn't pick this up anymore. I mean, I read this stuff when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
when it was 15 cents.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? But you got me all fascinated now.
I think
now,
you'll find
you know?
It interesting. There's a lot of historical depth.
I think it's really
depth.
Cool,
of,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
you'll find some fun stuff in there.
And especially if you live in L.A. as a reader.
If you live in L.A., if you're interested in Los Angeles history, the history of the movie business, the history of occultism in Los Angeles, it's all kind of represented here.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. So cool. It's not just the skull with the cigarette on the front. You've got a whole,
oh, I sure do,
a whole
yeah.
story going between the covers.
Definitely.
There you go. Sean, thank you so much for joining us. You're amazing.
Thank you.
It was great to be here.
Of course, much more success to you. You really deserve to succeed in this because you're good. You put in, you paid your dues. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You've gone to school. You've written a lot of stuff. And now you're doing the publicity and everything. And I trust you'll do very well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Everybody go up on there and write reviews for crying out loud, people.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Yeah.
I know. It's like I get lazy about them. And sometimes I just go, you know what? I should write a review.
Even a quick star rating. You don't even have to commit to anything more than hitting the little stars.
Exactly.
It's enormously helpful.
Five of them.
Please,
that's
five.
Just one star.
All the stars you can throw my way.
It's like all these systems. You do 4 stars and it takes everything down, you know, like by a lot. So they have to understand that when you rate people like on Uber and all these surveys this stuff, you got to give them excellent thing, you know.
It's true.
But some people I just can't give them, and they complain. And I go, do you really think you gave me a 5-star service?
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to earn the 5 stars here.
Right,
so.
There you go. You've earned it here.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Sean, thank you so much for joining us again. All the best to you. Rachel, feel better.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, with something, I guess we'll never know what it feels like. But I'm still going to ask you what it feels like. Maybe one day you'll be able to express it in words.
Sorry.
Would you, as a writer, be able to express PMS in writing?
I have no idea. It would definitely be a challenge.
You'd have to research that.
I would have to research it, yes.
Right. All right, everybody. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel exclusively on LA Talk Radio.